Good morning. Today is Friday, the 17th of February.
February.
Karen Deemer from the city of Arcata is alongside.
Good morning.
February. Long week.
Once a month. I'll be here in February.
Oh, you guys taking Monday off?
Yeah. City hall, city businesses, offices are closed.
Yeah, I figure if the banks are, it's a pretty good indication most everybody is. Are you ready? Sound intelligent?
Never.
Okay. Then we are...
Never or always. Okay. Winston told me he's going to help me out this morning.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we spent just the briefest of moments actually talking about the program before the show.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we use the term border?
Why do we use the term border?
Border.
And I'm not sure what the term border has to do with what we talked about before at the show.
Housing.
Oh, housing.
Border.
Is that a clue? It has to do with housing? And property lines.
Take it for what it's worth.
Okay. It was originally used to define your neighbor's property from your own.
All right. In the form of a question. Either way, it's not going to help you out. Many an early table consisted of single hand-hewn board laid across a trestle. Early inns gave no service with their meals. Landlords simply piled food on the board and let everyone pitch in. Charges were simple. A guest paid a flat fee for a place by the board. By the 15th century, it had become customary to sell board space by the week. This practice led to the use of label boarder for anyone eating regularly at an establishment. Boarding houses, once found in nearly every American town and city, are commemorated in the novels of Thomas Wolfe and other great writers. But a detailed description of many present-day communities would reveal that there's not a single boarder in town.
Okay.
I don't know.
It would be
probably
good.
Health and safety.
We could use boarding houses, actually. I think that type of group living and support living, whether it's for students or seniors or people with disabilities or those of us that don't want to cook for ourselves every night.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Well, housing seemed to be a little bit of an issue the last few weeks. Frankly, I think the concept of a barge is intriguing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what it meant and what it was looking like, but the concept of a floating house has always been wildly attractive to me, and that's kind of what I was envisioning that and could be totally off base, but was envisioning with this concept of using a barge, but I guess it isn't something that's being embraced by a lot of folks.
Well, I'm not sure. There does seem to be a lot of support for the concept. I think the crunch that Cal Poly is experiencing is, in, I'll say, 2014, 15, 16, they reached a high of enrollment of about 8,500 students. Then the decline started, shortly after that, and they lost about 2,500, close to 3,000 student base. We were a little bit below, we're about 6,000 probably this year. So as they rebuild, you would think that we would have available housing. But in fact, Arcata's population has grown at a faster rate than we have ever seen, at least in the last 25 years in Arcata, faster rate of residents moving in. So, and that would not be the student population because it was the exact same time that we saw enrollment declining. So even though the university is still well over 2,000 students less than they were several years ago, as they even rebuild to that, say, 2015 level, those housing units have already been rented by people that are just going to be long-term residents but not related necessarily to the university.
People.
Yeah, well, which I think students are people too.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. There's a subset.
Yeah. So the university realizes that to even have modest growth of, let's say 300 to 500 students per year, they need to be building housing, and they are. I mean, we talked about it last month about the Craftsman Mall project. There's another 350 beds that's slated already in design for campus.
Is that getting the dorms all up and running?
No, it's an engineering science. It's a new facility that will house additional engineering programs and science programs, and it's where what they call the campus field. If you really want to date some of us, it's
baseball?
Where Lumberjack Days used to be.
Okay, is that the baseball field? By the botany building?
It's by the wildlife building in front of the greenhouses.
Yeah, that's the old baseball field.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, I mean, if you want to go on a date, girl,
yeah,
that's baseball
Brian
field.
Brian will go back a little farther, even the lumberjack days.
Thanks.
So, yeah. So, and then Craftsman Mall is slated at around 960 beds. But in the interim, I think so they started looking at hotels. And obviously, long-term leasing of hotel space in cities makes city managers nervous. Because we rely.
They're not paying TOT because they're there longer than 30 days.
Right. So bed tax is significant. They have rented the Comfort Inn for this year, and that's about $135,000 a year in TOT for the city.
If they lost.
But
do they backfill in for you?
We're working on a plan to do that with them.
I mean, there's lunches. You're talking about it. Okay.
We are. And they're looking, you know, I mean, we have to find a way to really just legitimately, you know, do that, make that process from state funds have a lot of strings attached to them as well. So trying to find a nexus to certain projects that, you know, would be things that the university could support. But that's one hotel. And then the other thing they've agreed to do is, you know, they took out all the hotel furniture, say this year at Comfort Inn, and put it in storage. They brought in student housing furniture.
A little heftier?
Well, just more double occupancy with desks and, you know, single beds as opposed to queen or king beds. And then they'll move all of that out and the hotel will operate for, you know, the whole months of June and July and then part of May and August.
Oh, really? So they won't be available for the kids to stay in if they're going to?
In summer, because they'd have dorms that would be available. They're never going to fill their dorms in the summer right now on campus.
Yeah, but moving after one night on the road is kind of a pain.
Yeah.
After 6 or 7 months, packing everything up and then knowing that.
Which is similar to the dorms on campus. Students move out of those in the summer, too, unless they're enrolled in summer school.
Yeah, you know. I suppose.
Yeah. But it does free up those spaces then to generate TOT in the summer for us. So they do have potential leases with the Super 8 and Motel 6 as well. So that's for City of Arcata, close to $400,000 a year in TOT potential.
Well, you got the TOT nailed, don't you?
It's something we watch closely.
Yeah.
More
particularly on these three properties.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. What's the most frustrating thing you're dealing with right now? Other than me?
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
You know, I think it's just the challenge of housing right now in California. I think that is the most...
Well, you're not dealing with the state.
Well, we're dealing with new state regulations, and, you know, we're dealing with state economics that, you know, have... In part, or national economics that have caused building costs to go up tremendously. So it's like even if you've got properties that are zoned, it's trying to find housing that will pencil out that allows units to be affordable for the salaries and wages that we have in this region and can be built at a cost that makes a modest profit, you know, not a gouging profit, but a modest profit, and trying to balance that as we grow in a way that keeps our small town look and feel. I think that's probably our biggest challenge.
That look and feel, is that a cost extension? Is that just a design that is easy enough to incorporate? I'm thinking if there was a community in a wood area that had a lot of Victorians. And the standard was, we want everything to look Victorian-esque.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost a ton more than saying, okay, well, you know, we can just do whatever you feel comfortable with, and we don't have to worry about some of these other accoutrements.
Mm-hmm.
Fancy word. punch it out, and as long as it pencils out, we're okay, and it's safe and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of have a spectrum there.
Yeah.
So when you use that phrase, is that color schemes, combinations? Is it architectural design? Is it landscaping? What is it that makes it fit in?
Yeah, yes, yes, and yes. And it doesn't necessarily have to fit in. I mean, Arcata has a lot of different types of architectural styles, you know, as it's moved through the eras, right, of development and building. So the community is wrestling right now, and this is going to be a less fancy term, but still probably unknown to a lot of people, of what we call form-based code. It's a code that gives you very distinct regulations of what we're looking for. For example, this amount of landscaping, this amount of parking. Yes, you can go up 5 stories, let's say, but after 3 stories, you need to step that back, you know, 10 feet. So you don't have 4 or 5 or more stories that are straight from the sidewalk, straight up the whole way, what we call a step back, which means after 2 or 3 stories, you're moving back 10 feet, or after 4 stories, you're moving back another 10 feet. So
avoiding the canyon feel.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that you're not in a canyon. Perfect way to describe it. So the community right now is looking at a form-based code for one area of our city, but I think really as a model for what we would use in different areas. Our limiting factor is going to be land base. You know, how much of our land do we want to be in the built environment? Arcata's current general plan really wanted to preserve the outlying areas in what they call the green belt, whether it was the agricultural lands to the west, the forest lands to the east, you've got the river to the north and the bay to the south, right? So if you want to preserve those outer areas, then everything is being built interior to that, which is where we come up with the concept of infill.
Now, is that city regulations, or is that a lot of the state and national environmental codes that say you can't build, even if you wanted, if the city wanted it, you still can't build within these areas, and then what's left over is kind of what the jurisdiction has influence on?
I'd say it's more locally regulated than maybe we would recognize. You know, it's confined by infrastructure. Where do you have water and sewer? And for cities, it's confined by what are your city boundaries? You know, can you annex additional lands if that is your interest? Or if it's outside the city limits, does the county want to allow housing? And can you come up with a reciprocal agreement to have, you know, some sort of service that the county provides water and sewer, but it runs through the city's system? You know, we've seen that in certain areas. We can't, as a city, there were state laws many years ago that were passed. We can't extend water and sewer outside the city boundaries. We can on an emergency basis, say a septic system failed, but it really needs to be a parcel that has the ability to annex into the city if we're going to provide that service.
So you couldn't do that, let's say if there were wells 2 blocks outside the city limit.
Mm-hmm.
The property owner would have liked it, or there was environmental concerns. You guys couldn't cut a deal with the county and say, okay, we'll just run out another quarter mile or whatever. Here's the cost. You guys pay it. We're there, and then you're shaking your head.
We can't. I mean, you know, we can't.
I wonder what the thought behind that was.
I think they just wanted for cities to cap growth in certain areas and not just sprawl sort of where.
Yeah, but if it's in the county, then the county would be the jurisdiction of record, and mm-hmm. they could either say yay or nay. It wouldn't right. be the city yeah. trying to force it.
Yeah, I think it's just it's the general concept from maybe the 70s that was around orderly development. And once you bring water and sewer, the ability to create denser housing or denser use in an area is just exponentially. If you are on septic, right, you need that land mass and that space to have those leach fields and so forth. But if you're not, then, you know, development becomes a much higher pressure.
It would seem as if there would be more pressures for Arcata than to either get into those greenbelt areas, as housing is the number one driver mm-hmm. now, not some of the other concerns. Something to ponder during the break. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Karen, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the pressures between housing and what you called it green space. I'm going to call it environmental pressure groups. It seems from what I hear now that there's a lot of the same people that have concerns about both. So instead of just having developers... Mm-hmm. Mean, nasty, grubby, profit-centered developers. I mean, is that the scenario?
He's on a roll today.
Versus the all-loving, all-caring, all-concerning environmental community.
Mm-hmm.
That there's now a blending of those that's going on, and a lot of folks that are in the development community are concerned about the environment,
mm-hmm. sure.
obviously,
mm-hmm.
whether it's intrinsically or it's financial-driven, either way. And a lot of the environmental folks are now looking and saying, you know, we want to have more people be able to get housing in our area
right.
and be able to take care of things. So this right. kind of coming together from the ends mm-hmm. into the center, mm-hmm. is it making for, I guess, the phrase is strange bedfellows, where everybody's kind of working together to try to make this be accommodated rather than before it was hammer and tongs?
I would agree that there is a lot of inertia about some basics of infill development, of needing more housing units, of creating denser areas of our community that more housing units can be built. When you really put kind of design to paper, I think that's where there's just a lot of divergent ideas about what that looks like in specific neighborhoods. You know, all of our neighborhoods have a built environment in Arcata. A built-out environment. They all have a look. They all
a personality.
Have residence. They all, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And infill can have the perception of changing that, and it can change that.
Well,
right?
It does so definitionally, doesn't it? If you got an empty field that you grew up playing in and riding
sure.
your bikes in, and all of yeah. a sudden now there's three buildings there,
right?
It's kind of tough to ride your bikes through somebody's backyard.
Your
and
experience
over the fence.
In that space changes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, I mean,
yeah.
if that's a given in the equation,
right?
But there used to be the arguments about, well, so-and-so is going to block my view, so I'm going to complain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we're talking about going up instead of going out, yeah, it's
yeah.
going to change.
And it is concerning. And you're blocking potentially sunlight from units, windows, ground story windows that had sun in the midday in December or whatever, you know.
So you've got the housing pressures, you've got yeah. that reality, and I suppose the caustic perspective is, well, if you don't want that to happen, buy the property yourself, protect your view. Well, that's not feasible
it's
for a
not.
Lot of folks.
For most folks in Arcata, it's
but
not.
But to go and argue aggressively and to stop projects because of your view, and now you've got housing not happening because of that,
right.
is that why you're rich and famous?
Well, it is why we are in this really intensive planning process to try to say, bring the community together now to say, what can we agree on? There's going to be give and take. But before you have the real pressure of a project with a timeline where a developer has a guaranteed right to get through that process, before we get to that point, let's come together and say, what do we want in this area? And let's be very, very detailed in what we were discussing as a form-based code. There's a ton of information on the city's website about this, you know, which is just cityofarcata.com. if people want to know more. But it's called Strategic Infill Planning Effort, or the Gateway is the area of the city that we're working on this form-based code for.
So just a portion of the city rather than the entire boundary?
The form-based code right now is just for this very specific area, because hopefully we'll have some specific design around how transportation circulation will work, where parks might be, where real certain areas might allow only three-story, four-story, five-story. You know, the Planning Commission has talked about six- and seven-story. But we'll, you know, the council will make all of those final decisions.
But it's, so this form, okay, wait a minute, I wrote it down. Form-based codes. Mm-hmm. Isn't that my understanding from past discussions with certain city managers in Arcata that it's kind of like a checkbox list?
It is.
If you follow this, then you're not going to run in, you may have people not happy, but you're not going to have to go through appeals, public hearings, and your timeline is going to be much more efficient, and you're going to get your project through, where if you deviate off of this, okay, now Pandora's box is open, and who knows what or who is living inside of that.
The idea is, yes, that it builds in also certainty for the developers. We've come together as a community ahead of time. We've said this is what we agree to have as the future built environment. You, developer, come into this area. If you build to this vision that we've created, then there is more certainty in that process for you. And
but not absolute?
I can't say absolute for any project until I see it in front of me, because we rarely see a project that doesn't have some request for a variance of some code, right?
Just listening to what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to say, with certainty, this is it every time. But
yeah,
that doesn't exist. And, you know, and people want personal choice. You brought up the idea of we want Victorian-esque. Well, but a lot of people don't want Victorian-esque, and they own the property, right? And we have a real strong cultural piece around personal preference and personal choice in this country.
Well, I thought you were going to say around Victorians in our area.
Yeah. And we have, a lot of people have a real strong love.
There are a number of larger Victorian buildings that are in various states of, I don't know if it's closer to the repair or the disrepair, mm-hmm. but let's just say challenged properties. Well, at some point, you know, if you can't get all the moldings and you can't do this and you can't do that, either it looks, I can't say it that way, like a train wreck, or it's probably better just to blade it or sell the parts off and start all over again.
Right.
Is there, I would imagine that there would be potential blowback on that also, because the neighbors want it as it is, or people driving by like to remember, hand-to-hand, and more stuff for somebody to go through before they can actually have something there that's a completed project, and their ROI is predicated on a certain timeline.
How does
that balance occur?
There are a lot of homes, we'll say, or buildings in this area that have a historic nature to them, and then there are some that are listed as historic structures or are listed on the historic registry. Those are two very different things. If there is a parcel with a home, and sometimes we talk about, demolition of that, sometimes we talk about it intentfully, sometimes we talk about it just by neglect, right? If people
dry rot
afford that
does
properties.
An awful lot, yeah.
Yeah. And there are things, if you're not on a historic registry or a significant property listed in a city plan or a city list, you may have a historic process that you need to go through, but there are ways to document, to photo document that house. There are mitigations that you can take if the ultimate goal is to clear that property and build for new development. But then there are significant restrictions if you have a home that's really a listed significant historic resource.
Well, my understanding with the historic register is that there's tax incentives associated with it.
There can be.
And then if you are looking to either neutralize that or make it void, then there's catch-up payments. I guess is the simplest way.
If you took advantage of that, if you said, I want to reinvest in this historic property, you apply for what's called the Mills Act. And then you get a reduction in your property taxes for that, because we recognize that you're going to take that investment. And you have to list. These are the improvements that I'm going to do, and here's the period that I'm going to match, and here's how I'm going to do that, and the cost of that.
So if you do that, mm-hmm. and then you sell to me, am I under that obligation to mm-hmm. recognize?
That property is under that Mills Act contract for a period of time.
So I decide that I want to knock it down within the first tax cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So I've received no benefit from that status. Do I have to make good for what you received?
It would be on title. I mean, most of those contracts would be on your title. So either
once it gets to that status, it becomes pretty locked in, unless you're really, really motivated to do something.
Yeah, and depending on the level that you're getting there, you know, there is a formula and the number of years. But most people that have really invested to go through the Mills Act process and put that type of investment in a historic resource, that building is going to stand for a long time.
It's not one of these dry rot wonders that we're talking about.
No, and it's going to be sold to a person who cares about that historic value.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:50. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Deemer. Obviously, there's no easy solution for housing. Okay. But you've got these mandates that the state is imposing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess financially either rewarding or popping you if it's not achieved. How quick can some of these things that you've talked about this morning actually be implemented, put into place, and then have the results that everybody is looking for, so there are more front doors, so to speak, available in the town?
It takes time. Community planning processes take time. So our council has put some deadlines that they would like to see a draft by summer of all of, you know, the codes around Gateway and the other. There are a few other areas in the downtown and north town that the planning commission is looking at. And they would like to at least have the policy work done, I think, by the end of summer. And I know that there are some property owners and developers that are waiting to see what happens, you know, with some of those properties before they put in plans for that. But we're still seeing at least a trickle, I'd say, of, you know, housing development come in. We have some new units that will be going out in the Valley West area that Will Adams has just had approved by the Planning Commission.
Is that the empty slot there by the Hampton?
Not the big one. It's a smaller one on, I'll say, kind of the southwest. It's right at the Horseshoe. So it goes Hampton and then Comfort Inn, and then there's one.
And empty?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Before you get to the road. So it's in that space. We also know that when there is an architect working on that big parcel, that will be mixed use.
There is some action going there, commercial and
housing on that, and a good Arcata architect working on that. So I'm excited to see those plans come in.
That's a pretty big chunk, isn't it?
It is. And we had seen a set of plans that had come in initially that was sort of just all, I mean, I won't describe it exactly as kind of the strip mall expansion there, but really it was all single story sort of build out over time.
More retail?
Yeah.
Kind of seems counter to
what we need in that area.
What seems to be trending, yeah.
We're excited that the property owner is reconsidering that and doing some mixed development out there. So we're hoping to see that. So we are getting, still building units. There's another 100 units that are going out in the Westwood Gardens. Been some controversy around that Steve Strombeck built or purchased and is building now. But we do have units that are in the works. And so I think our communication with the state is pretty solid on the direction that we're going. But the big fear isn't so much that they're going to fine us or take money. It's that they're just going to start to approve developments.
Just willy-nilly.
Yeah. I mean, that is the real gem of the form-based code, is that it is neutral. It is created ahead of time. Everybody is held to it. So we can enforce it, because otherwise the state is coming in if people are building housing.
Then you'd have Victorians all over the place.
And I haven't seen that in the state's code.
Thanks for coming by. See you everybody on Monday.